Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rains on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rains on the track when we unite.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Not joined as always. I have made my return. Fun is back on the Mike and JD Show. And yeah, I actually missed doing the show last week. So I'm back. Yeah. It's good to be home.
How was that? How were the state championships?
Could have been better. Could have been worse. Could have been better. We had a kid that we thought could win it. He wound up taking fifth. We had a kid that we thought was going to place. He got nervous under the bright lights. You know, I had a kid that was very average all year who was a match away from placing, and he outperformed, but we had everybody else kind of underperformed a little bit. So, you know, it could have been a lot worse, but I think it could have been a lot better. I think we overachieved in getting kids there. I think that we did what we wanted when we got them there, but, you know, we have high expectations. So another year to build, another year to grow.
Well, that's awesome, man. Well, we are glad to have you back. Thank you to Joe Gilbert. Fed Pill Joe himself was in the co-host seat just last week, and it was really fun to get to talk to him. It's kind of nice just to have my cousin on the show, because I don't actually like we don't actually get to talk like face to face. We text a lot, but that's about it. So it was nice just to have like a family member on the show who was kind of just a big of wrestling fanatic as we are. So that was a lot of fun, and I am so excited for what we got coming up on the Mike and JD Show YouTube channel next week. So if you're watching this on YouTube, if you're on the Mike and JD Show Network, thank you for being here. If you're on the Voices of Wrestling Network, thank you for being here. Greatly appreciate it. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And we're also on Patreon, patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. It's where you can get this audio early and ad-free. And plus a bunch of bonus content. Speaking of which, next week on the Mike and JD Show YouTube channel, we are going to introduce Sting Week. So JD and I on our Patreon, we've been banking episodes where we're just like, and this actually just happened like naturally one day where we just decided to start talking, like we just want to talk about Sting more. And we started to do that. So our first episode was like, I want to say like in November, and it wasn't like planned to be a part of any type of special deal or anything, but we did a full podcast just talking about the history of Ric Flair versus Sting and that great feud, because AEW had just brought Flair in, announced him that he was going to be a part of Sting's last match, all that stuff. So we did a full episode on that. And then we just kept talking about Sting. We're like, oh, you know, I think we've got something here. We have like a full week of episodes. So they're already all most of them are already on our Patreon. JD and I have one more to record. We're going to do that this weekend. We're going to record Sting versus Hogan. But we have Sting versus Flair. We did Sting and Vader, Sting and Cactus Jack, Sting versus the Dangerous Alliance. Joe and I last week, we did Sting versus Kurt Angle, which was a lot of fun. And then, so now we got another one. Yeah, we got another one coming up, Sting versus Hogan. So we have a full week of just episodes that I'm going to release every single day on our YouTube. Sting Week. It's going to be awesome.
It is going to be awesome. I'm excited. I think we're going to load up on some of our Patreon content. You got a brace for impact. I'm coming out of retirement with JD Oliva Project this weekend. So yeah, man, cool.
Yeah. If you want early access to all that stuff and you don't want to wait, like to get one show a day on YouTube, and we're going to have full audio and video on Patreon, because some of our stuff I can't put on YouTube because it's just JD and I watching matches. and WWE will they'll block our shit for it. So like we watched the full 1992 War Games match where Sting the Sting Squadron took on Dangerous Alliance. That was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was. By the way, if you haven't ever watched War Games 1992, go ahead and pause the show. Go watch War Games 92. Mike and I will be back. We understand. We will. We are not the Dangerous Alliance. We are not the Swinging Squadron. We're below the totem pole. So, like, go watch that show. It's still, I think it's still the best War Games match that I've ever had.
Yeah, dude, I had not watched that in years, and I was honestly like a little bit surprised at just how well that match held up, like after all this time, over 30 years.
I think a lot of WCW stuff from the early 90s, the work rate was so different than WWF at the time. And I think a lot of it has aged really well because I think that pro wrestling has kind of come close, like mainstream wrestling has come closer to what WCW was in ring wise at the time than what WWE was at the time. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't see a lot of like what WWE, with the exception of Brett, with the exception of like, you don't see a lot of what WWF was doing back then in wrestling now, but you see a lot of what WCW was doing, like that, you know, that high impact style. And you saw that in this match. Like, it was kind of a, what we see, because, you know, today the ring busts, not frequently, but frequently enough where we see the ring being destroyed. In 1982, you never saw, you know, people hitting each other with the actual turnbuckle. Like the metal turnbuckle, you didn't see people beating each other with that back then. So, in some ways, the match was ahead of its time. A lot of ways.
Yeah, no. In a lot of ways, it really was ahead of its time. But speaking of not holding up very well, John Cena was on Howard Stern yesterday, and I'm going to go ahead. I'm sure JD, you have probably not heard this audio. I can't play the whole thing, but Brandon Thurston posted a clip. Yeah. Brandon Thurston played a clip. I'm going to play a couple of seconds of it, then I'll read a transcript from it. But he had spoke to Howard Stern. This was from yesterday. He actually recorded about 5 minutes of a little over an hour of their conversation. I better get to the present screen. I almost just played it to where I was going to be the only guy hearing it. So let me actually get this up. So Stern, I thought, you know, people giving Stern a hard time. And as you guys know, I'm a big Stern fan. I understand what he was doing whenever he set this question up. He's trying to make John Cena feel comfortable and make him open up when talking about the subject. But little did he know that John Cena is super roboto when talking about Vince McMahon. Here's some of Howard and Cena from yesterday.
But this is a guy who's been so good to you.
Sure.
And so great in your career. I imagine it's a mind fuck. And then when you get asked about it, it's like, it's too complicated to even talk about.
So I don't think it's complicated to talk about. I think it's complicated to listen to. And that's kind of why I don't necessarily put a lot of time and equity into it.
Yeah.
Again, I think there's still a long ways to go.
Yeah.
I can say this. I'm a big advocate of love and friendship and honesty and communication. But in the same breath, I'm also a big advocate of accountability.
Yeah, me too.
I think you explained it well of if someone's behavior lies so far outside your value system that the balance shifts of like, man, I can't operate in a world where this works.
Yeah.
That's the end result of being accountable.
I can't listen to it anymore. So,
but you,
it was, he was trying so hard not to say, this guy's a fucking creep. You know what I mean? Like, he just couldn't say it.
No, but he does. He's like talking about, well, he's my friend. Ultimately he came back to Vince as his friend. So his value system, you know, a little bit, you know, his vices was perfectly fine with the dude shitting in someone's hair. Right. I can't process this, man. Like, it's not hard to just kind of not say nothing, you know, and he manages to say so many words without fucking saying a thing. Right. This is why he was the centerpiece of WWE for so long, because he's just so full of shit. Like, you can't, like, God forbid you use the word Taiwan in a sentence, John. But I mean, like, this you tap dance around. Fuck. Like, I'm super disappointed in him as a human being, like, at this whole
thing. Me too, because he's always kind of like one of the good guys. You know what I mean? But he said, right now, I'm going to love the person I love. Be oh. their friend. I love you. You have a hill to climb. That rape charges, sex trafficking charges, hill to climb. There, that's a pretty big hill, buddy. There's a saying of you don't know who your friends are until shit hits the fan or shit hits somebody's hair or your back is against the wall. That doesn't make any of what's going on any easier to swallow. Just telling someone you love them. It's a hill to climb, and we'll see what happens. Or that is one John Cena on the sex trafficking charges against Vince McMahon and the WWE.
Or when you forcibly press someone against the wall and hold them there while you violate them. I just, we're not talking about a guy who got busted for, you know, bringing drugs over the border, right? This isn't Steve Williams in 1992. This is abhorrent charges. And I hate that we have to fucking do this all the time, but sometimes I feel like people stuff slide. And right, John Cena is very well trained in the media and how to deal with media. But this isn't the first time that John Cena's made a complete ass of himself on the Howard Stern show. Howard's better at it than most people, quite frankly, because he went on Stern almost 20 years ago and shit on the late Chris Canyon. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I don't know, man. We're at a person is defined by how they act in moments of conflict. And all I'm seeing from John Cena in moments of conflict is cowardice. And it's really disappointing. It's really disappointing.
He has an opportunity to get in front of it and be bold. He can say, you know, Vince, absolutely, like, I owe a lot to him and yada, yada, yada. But if this shit that they're saying about him is true, like, I want nothing to do with that guy. Like, but instead he dances around and uses, like, corporate buzzwords. Like, it goes against my value system. Like, be a human being, dude. Say, like, this is disgusting. It's abhorrent. And if it's true, and, you know, I'm not going to have this guy in my life anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's okay to say. And I think it's okay to say if it's true, because especially if, like, that's your friend, like, that's somebody that you're close to, and you probably want to wait for all the facts to come out. But, like, it's more than just one allegation. It's like we're like Weinstein, Bill Cosby level, like, to where we're talking about a lot here, and more just keeps coming out about not only the stuff that he was engaging in, but stuff that he overlooked all throughout his career.
We're knocking on Epstein territory, to be honest with you. Like,
yeah.
Is he so programmed? Like, is he such a corporate robot that he's just kind of eradicated all actual human feeling from him, from his actual persona now, where all he can do is just be John Cena, the corporate puppet, and, like, we don't, human part of him totally gone? Like, is that where we are with him?
I think so, because JD, okay, say JD, you're in a movie, right? JD gets cast in a movie. It's a big movie, a big picture, and it screened very well. The audience scores are through the roof. And when it comes time to release the movie studio just tosses it away. Like, say, Wile E. Coyote versus Acme, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what just happened. John Cena was in that movie. Howard asked him about that and said, aren't you pissed about that? And he goes, well, no, you know, I did my best in the movie and it's out of my control. I just, nothing I can do about it. And they felt that this was the best thing they could do. Is this, they're just moving chess pieces here. And this is just one chess piece that they moved. And that way they can save it for another move later. I'm just like, dude, he is a complete robot at this point.
He has no
human emotion.
There's no human emotion there. He's fucking dead. No, that's, I was going to say he was Data from Star Trek The Next Generation, but that's not even true. Data's whole arc was that he tried to have human emotion and tried to be human. John Cena is one of the freaking Borg. Like, he's just got no humanity left in him. Like, it's just, these are, and I kind of understand what he means about, like, there's a lot of actors that have the opinion of, like, hey, I did my work while working. Whatever happens after is after. I interviewed Bryan Cranston once. And he said, my reward is doing work because I can't control what happens after that. You know, because again, like, so many actors, like, live and die by their reviews and how this thing performed and blah, blah, blah. So I understand that. But then at the same time, to go ahead and start complimenting Zaslav's moves, like, that's when you lose me. It's like, there's nothing left in him. Like, the whole WWE corporate literally broke inside of him. That's a living, breathing, emotional human being. And we're left with just this automaton, this android. Like, fuck, dude, show some fucking emotion. Like,
yeah, I hate to say be more like Randy Orton, but in this case, be more like Randy Orton. Now, people are still coming after Randy Orton, but I thought that his his comments are a little bit refreshing. When he was asked about it, this is from Sports Illustrated. He said, I got to say this. I wouldn't be where I am without Vince, taking a chance on me a handful of times. I would not be where I am today without him. But fuck, I'm reading this shit. And what you've seen in red, and I've seen in red, as far as commenting on it, it fucking hurts my heart. And then he did a couple more interviews. But I was just like, I think that's a very, like, honest way to say it. It's a human response to this, because I know, and what Howard was trying to get at, and that's why he's probably the best interviewer that there is out there at this point. I mean, the guy's been doing it for, you know, almost 50 years. Mm-hmm. Where he was trying to come at it from not like an antagonistic approach when he's asking the question. He's trying to meet him on a human level, trying to open up that human side of Cena. And he was met with the most robotic corporate buzzword like talk in history. And I was just like, it's like, damn, like if you can't get real with Howard, man, who can you get real with?
Randy Orton is someone with a checkered past. I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that. He's very, very immature, but over the last few years, it seems like he has made an effort to become a better human being. Like, it seems like this marriage is working. He's trying to be a dad. Like, I'm a firm believer in men's past should not be erased, but it, you know, I try to make value judgments on people based on who they are now and understand that we've all got skeletons in our closet. We've all got things we're not proud of. We're all making mistakes every day. Right. So like, I see this from Randy Orton. I see a guy who understands the severity of the situation and who's acting like a real person and who seems like he's acting like he didn't know any of this stuff, you know, like saying something like it hurts my heart. Like, Randy Orton, which is so funny because on camera, he's the one that always came off like the automaton robot. And John Cena was always the guy who seemed like he was so human, which just goes to show you that wrestling is bullshit, right? I don't know, man. I'm actually, Orton's not a perfect person. I don't think he'd tell you he's a perfect person. But his reactions to this are far more human than the overwhelming majority of wrestlers I think we've heard from on this subject.
Yeah. he really is. And you know what, like, I think you said it perfectly. Like, I'm also a guy that has made some mistakes, and kind of like in my position now where I'm a first sergeant, you know, like a first sergeant light, like I have a guy over me, but I handle a lot of the work and a lot of the cases, and like somebody comes in, I'm like the perfect guy to talk to about the problems, because chances are I've either experienced it myself, I've done the things that they've done, or I've been close to somebody that has done those things or that has had those things happen to them. And I can relate to them on a human level. Right. And so when I see a guy like Randy Orton, like actively making changes in a life, I'm just like, you know, good for you. Like, I hope nobody judges me based off the guy that I was when I was, you know, roaring around Korea when I was 25 years old. You know what I mean? Cause like, I'm not that dude anymore. Like, I'm 40, I'm married. You know, I got a kid. Like, I'm a completely different dude. Like, the things that I would say to people back then are just not going to come out of my mouth anymore. That's just not who I am, you know?
I was having a conversation on Sunday with a friend of mine who's getting into coaching. And I was telling her that, you know, I said, people like us, we've got, you know, I use this not specifically Mike, but just like as a metaphor, but we have battle scars and war stories, and we've tasted failure and defeat and victory. And like, this is what's good. These are the things that are going to make you a good coach. These are the things that make you a good teacher, make you a good mentor, is the fact that you've had experience in life and you're going to take those life lessons and apply them. Right. And you're using them to make young men better men. Right. Yeah. That's your job. It's kind of mine too. Like, this is what we do. And I hear Randy Orton, I hear a guy who's, I believe, trying to be better, right? Like, I hear, I think we all have like regrets from our 20s. Who doesn't? If you can't look back in your 20s and go, God, I wish I didn't do that. Like, what, you know? And I try to live straight and narrow as much as possible. But like, even I have stuff where I'm like, why did you do that? Like, you know, those
dude,
moments.
Like, On a daily basis, I'm like, man, I shouldn't have said that way, right? Mm-hmm. Or I shouldn't have treated this person like that. Like, that should not have been my response. Mm-hmm. But here's how you know, like, you're growing, and here's how you know you're, like, you know, kind of a wiser person, is you're willing to take accountability for those moments and like, hey, look, I shouldn't have said it that way. Like, that's not the way I meant it. Or maybe you did mean it that way. But like, you know what? I'm having a rough one today. I need to be better than that. you know, hey, forgive me. I'll try my best not to let that happen again. You know, like that kind of like daily accountability. I think is very important in the growth of like of everybody. And that's why like I try not to dogpile on somebody who's actively trying to make a difference in their life. Now, mm-hmm. if they're not really one of those people that's like willing to take accountability, they're just hoping everybody forgets. Well, that's a little bit different, right? Because you really haven't you're still carrying that burden, right? And you're wanting everybody to forgive you despite the fact that you're not actively changing. That becomes a little bit different. And so and that's why I hate to see people kind of getting, you know, getting away with things time and time again without ever changing. And to circle back to Vince, that's the type of guy that we're talking about, right? Like, this isn't a guy that made mistakes. This is a guy who committed horrific crimes against humanity, right?
Multiple
times and continued to get away from it. And if you're wondering why, we start the show every week on this stuff, it's because it's about time that this guy faced some type of accountability, right? And what that is, that's up to the, you know, the court system. That's not up to JD and I. If I had my way, I'll tell you offline exactly what I think. But I think that's why it's important that we continue to talk about the story. We talk about the villains in the story. And unfortunately, it's not going to get, I don't think it's going to get much coverage, but John Cena just became, I think, like a minor, like bit part villain in the story with his lack of response, I would say.
Like, we always talk about in coaching, you can't be doing things the way your coaches did it or the way that, you know, it was done you were doing it 10 years ago, right? We're trying to grow. We're trying to be better people. We're trying to, like, you know, look back on how things were and like, I'm going to be better. And like the people say, well, this is the way it's always been. This is what I did. So it's fine. Like, and that's what Vince is going through right now. It's like, This is the way it's always been. It's fine. Everyone's on board with it. And unfortunately they created a culture where that kind of behavior was not only tolerated, but it seems like it was celebrated. Yeah. And I guess this is where I'm at. And I've talked about it multiple times on the show over the last like couple months. It's like, I'm so thoroughly disgusted with how our peers in the wrestling media and wrestling fans are trying to write this off or forget about it. That like, it's really had an impact on my enjoyment of pro wrestling as a whole right now. I'm trying to get over that. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to work to be better. But it's been tough. And then you hear someone like that. I thought very highly of John Cena. I really did. He's the good guy, right? Like, he had the hustle, loyalty, and respect thing. Like, it seemed like he believed in that. And like with the stuff with the Make-A-Wish kids, but like, I hear this and I'm like, was that just part of a, and then again, I'm just pontificating here. Is that part of a carefully crafted image? Is that like, was that stuff you did to make it look, you know what I'm saying? Like, I have to, when that's your reaction to human suffering, it makes me question everything I thought about you. And again, maybe that's my problem. Maybe that's something that I have to work on. But I mean, it's just, I'm having a hard time reconciling it from some, like, I just expected more from that guy.
Yeah, me too. And a real lack of empathy from the alleged victims, right? And I think that's, you know, the key part of it. And he just, I don't know, he just showed no emotional, you know, you brought up the wrestling media again, and
I always will.
I wanted to bring up this part and shout out Warren Hayes. Hayes, a friend of the show. Yeah, he's great. Well, we need to have him on. I invited him on. He accepted it. We just haven't connected to make it happen.
We got to do that.
Yeah. He was talking today in the Voices of Wrestling Slack and, you know, Vice Media. Did you see what's going on with Vice Media?
I'm out of it right now. Continue.
Dude, the new, you know, Vice got sold, right? To this new this big company. And they just shit canned all of Vice, right? Like, the website's going down. So they're giving like the writers like a time hack and to get like their stories that they posted on there, or they're going to be deleted forever. Like, they're just completely shit canning the whole operation, right?
Jesus Christ.
So all these journalists, not only they're laying off like hundreds of people, right? It's like bloodletting over there. It's awful. Well, one of those people is Tim Marchman, who's been kind of on the forefront of this story, specifically the Ashley Massaro case. And Warren did a good job by just, you know, reaching out to him on Blue Sky and said, hey, you know, I really hope that despite the fact that Vice is going under, that Tim Marchman is able to continue his work because it's important work. And I would agree. And fortunately, Tim like responded to Warren and said, my coverage is going to continue. And I'm really glad about that, because he's like a wrestling fan, but he's like a legit reporter. He's like an outsider. Mm-hmm. So to kind of have him on our side on this deal and kind of covering the story in depth, I think is super important. And it's a tough day at the office for the Vice folks, but I'm really glad that we got him.
We're in a scary place in traditional media right now, where I don't know what the future lies for. Print, the death of print media is scary, because like everything becomes consolidated, and how do you make money? Like how do any of us make money? Because like, if you're a legitimate journalist, you can't do what we're doing, you know, like your message doesn't go out. And there's a lot of people that have been able to monetize Substack. And like, that's one example. And it just is a way to continue coverage of news and talk about important stories. So whatever he decides to go with from here, I hope that it can be with a medium where you can still have a reach, like a powerful reach. Like, cause we need legit journalists on the forefront fighting the good fight, because when good people don't care anymore and turn a blind eye is when we lose everything. Like, I'll say fuck the Fightful guy until the day I die. Like Jimmy Van, piece of shit. Like you don't get to say, oh, thank you, Vince. And then turn around later and go, well, I didn't know when you clearly knew. Like I will never stop beating that drum for these people that are going to sing praises of people who aided and abetted these things. Like it's, fuck them all, man. Fuck them all.
Yeah, well, Tim Marchman has a spot on the Mike and JD show anytime he wants, but he's kind of big time. I don't think.
Yeah, open invite.
Open invite. JD, you mentioned growth in people and turning around and utilizing their mistakes to become coaches, and that reminded me of this really good documentary I just saw recently called Independence: Wrestling with the Community, where one of the coaches actually failed in his high school career. He kind of choked at a high level, and he used that failure in his life to go back and coach kids to state. And that's kind of what we do, right? And I use a lot of my failures in life to go back and coach young men and women and teach them like, hey, here's the path to do it. You don't have to do the things that I did. Here's a better way to do it. And if you're interested in Independence Wrestling with the Community, directed by JD Oliva, you can go to the Mike and JD Show YouTube channel right now. It's there for free. Check it out. Independence Wrestling with the Community. JD.
I'm pretty decent. The low budget, crappy filmmaking thing. That's actually a fun story. I actually got this is about 2010. I got a call one morning from a woman in Independence, Iowa, third grade teacher, who's like, I have 100 hours of footage, and I don't know what to do with it. And I'd started to develop a little bit of a reputation. Like they said, these Wisconsin Whitewater coaches told me to call you. And I'm like, oh. So I talked for like an hour with this woman on the phone. I'm like, oh my God, there's a story out here. So I actually moved out to Independence. I lived there for like two, 3 weeks over a summer. And then I brought my guys out there, and we basically finished the movie and like, gave it a spine and like took this, all this stuff and made a story out of it. So that was a fun project to do. And it's actually, I was pleasantly surprised at how well it had aged. Like this is stuff like between that and Last Maverick, I hadn't. Thanks, man. David Hatley says it was a damn good film. JD just watched it. It was amazing. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks,
these
David.
Are things I haven't watched in over a decade. And like, I look back at my film career and be like, what a fucking piece of shit that whole thing was. Like, I don't look back fondly on those days. And it's kind of nice that some of this stuff is getting some new life. And, I don't know, it makes this old teacher happy that, maybe I wasn't completely worthless at the thing I studied for all these years.
Well, I really like Last Maverick. And we need to get that link out too. That's over on, what's that on? Daily Motion? I can't remember which
Vimeo.
One. It's on
Vimeo.
Yeah, it's on Vimeo. And then over on our YouTube, Independence is over on the Mike and JD Show YouTube channel. So go ahead and check those movies out. King of the North is back. He's here for his weekly check-in. Hey. He's currently going crazy on Twitter about what's going on in Noah. He's not happy.
Dude, I'm so out of it right now because I've been so focused on amateur wrestling for the last month and a half. King of the North, what is going on in Noah this week? I mean, we got a guy who knows what's going on, but before I bring it to him, I want to know what the dirt is. Give me the dirt.
Yeah, well, they have a show going on right now. I'm obviously not watching it because I'm here with you, but it's probably a show I'm going to check out this weekend. But yeah, King of the North, not happy with what's going on in Noah.
Shit sucks.
You have to go to his Twitter to find out more details, but he's live tweeting the show. He's like, I was like, North is not happy today.
I feel like that was the core of my Twitter account from like October to like January. I think I've tweeted that same thing like a bazillion times. Fuck wrestling. I hate this shit so much. Oh, King of the North says, the show happening right now is headlined by Jack Morris versus Anthony Green. Because that's why we watch Pro Wrestling Noah, for Jack Morris versus Anthony Green.
I really like Jack Morris. I think he's got a future. I think he's got a future. I think Anthony Green's like a decent... They're a decent little wrestler. He's a decent little wrestler. I just don't see him ever being a star, but I think Jack Morris could be something one day.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah,
he's not bad. I just don't see that as being like a Noah main event. Two gaijin like that. I don't see that.
Yeah, but is tonight's show kind of like their?
I don't know.
Like kind of a side show. Like it can't be like a big show, right? Like
I don't know. I'm out of it. I'm out. I'm out of the loop.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel you. Hey, let's go to the next topic. We've got a few more topics to hit before we call it a night. This one, Joe and I talked about this last week. We predicted this one. Jennifer Pepperman is All Elite. She was a writer in the WWE system for a long time. She's kind of like Mercedes Moné's friend. AEW has hired her. She's like vice president of content something. I don't know, like everybody got so many EVPs in that company, but
bullshit
said that. Yeah, and then Dave said when she quit WWE last week, I was actually told by WWE that they expected that she'd be in AEW very soon because of her connection with Mercedes, and she's going to be Mercedes's personal rider, like a Brian Gewurz is for Dwayne Johnson. So Mercedes Moné pulling kind of a power move there, bringing over her own writer from the WWE system. And this is exactly what we've been needing, is more WWE influence on AEW, right?
You're expecting me to get really angry.
I know, on this.
No, and I'm not gonna, because I got a hot take for you.
Okay.
On this.
Okay, go ahead.
Did you watch Mercedes Moné's New Japan run?
I did, yeah.
What did you think of her work on the mic?
Honestly, not good.
Yeah.
But I've never been impressed by her on the mic. So
yeah, fair. Yeah. Here's the thing. Do I want AEW to be like WWE in any way, shape or form? No, I do not. Do I want them to maximize Mercedes Moné, who could be a game changer for that company as far as female talent goes? Yes, I do. Yep. Do I think that having her personal book, her personal writer and friend working with her specifically to maximize her talent be a good thing? I do. I think it could be a good thing. Again, I tend to try to look at these things optimistically. I don't like shitting on something until I know it's bad. Like, yeah. So I, as long as she's not making Daniel Garcia do stupid shit, I'm okay. Right. As long as she stays, because a part of me is like, okay, what do we got in the AEW women's division now? Like it's getting better, but it needs work. So if this is what helps Mercedes and gets her acclimated and helps and does that, fine. And it's hard for me to blame any specific writer for what goes on in WWE, because WWE is WWE. Not one individual creator has any true influence over that program. So I don't know, whatever. If it sucks in 6 months, I'll say that fucking sucks. But for right now, it's hard for me to get mad. I just don't want scripted promos from, I don't want scripted promos like WWE, where like I say my line, you say your line, I say my line, bitch. Like I hate that. Isn't that what happens? Isn't that what always happens?
You nailed it. Actually,
that's what. Thank you. That's what it is. I don't want that from AEW. I want John Moxley and Eddie Kingston pouring their hearts out to me. I want Sting talking about the death of his father. My God, that might be the best promo the man ever cut. Like, it was so raw and emotional. As long as she's not telling Eddie Kingston what to feel, who cares? And now, if she can help people who can't get to that, because that's something that's underrated, is having people that can help you. And there's Dusty Rhodes did that, and Crockett too. Like, there's always been people behind the scenes that are helping people get better at their promos. Right? We can't let people live and die. Like we talked, this whole big theme of the show has been personal growth, I think, right? We talked about taking stock in who you are and trying to grow. And as promos, if you're not taught how to be a good promo, it's might be hard to learn. So if she can help some people find something in themselves, I can't see it as being a bad thing. Now, like I said, if we're getting scripts for everything, if we're not allowed to think and feel, and we're trying to fashion everybody into a John Cena robot, bad, bad, no bueno. But if this helps Mercedes be awesome and draw money, well, fuck, they need all the help they can get.
Yeah, and I've been making fun of this hire, but I honestly have no problem with the hire. Here's what I have a problem with. I have a problem with people going on to Twitter saying, oh, wow, this is an excellent hire.
Yeah, I agree. Like, how the fuck do you know? Just, how do you know?
You just learned who this person is right now. And at this point, no one's really like wrote a story talking about the storylines that she created, right? Or the promos that she scripted that were awesome, right? We don't know if this is a great hire or not. We just know that Mercedes Moné likes her, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know that she did some daytime soap opera stuff. I'm not interested in that in pro wrestling. So when you guys are telling me that she got a daytime Emmy, you can wipe a monkey's ass with that daytime Emmy. I don't care about that at all. It does not impress me. Right? I want to know what she did in WWE that people actually liked. Now, if you can pinpoint something, let me know. I would appreciate it. But as of right now, no one's provided any evidence that she's pretty good at this job. So, you know, bring me some evidence that she's good. Now, we might find out in like 6 months, like you were saying, like she might be the one person to take this women's division over the top and make it interesting again. She might be able to do that. I don't know. Maybe she's the one that kind of like propels Mercedes Moné into superstardom and makes her an actual draw. Right. It could be. But for all the people that are lauding this hire, like Sean Ross Sapp was like the first one. He's like, this is an excellent hire. I'm like, Sean, what's your favorite story that she wrote? Like what segment, like specifically that she wrote, like Cradle to Grave is your favorite? What do you think? And the answer is that nobody knows, right? Like we do have a mutual friend that like knows her like a little bit. And so he's pretty high on her, and I'll take his word for it. But I'm going to have to see exactly what it looks like on TV before I start saying this is a good or a bad hire.
I think Sean's listening to people within the company who speak highly of her. Yeah. Right. So that tells me that she's liked by her peers, which is a good thing. I agree. I can't tell you it's a great hire or not. Mercedes feels like it's a good hire. And that's all I can base this on right now. Is like she, in my mind, she's the Mercedes whisperer. If she stays in Mercedes, fine. Just don't tell Eddie Kingston how to cut a promo. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, just don't go to Eddie and say, okay, Eddie, now a little bit more robotic, a little less emotion, and I want you to slow your cadence down because you're talking to complete fucking idiots that can't follow what you're saying.
And then when you're done, stare into the camera uncomfortably long.
You just made me uncomfortable a little bit.
That's what I... But is that what they do? Am I wrong? Yeah. Is that not what they do on that show? Like, I hate it so much. I fucking hate it. Yeah, don't do that. Yeah. As long as, because remember, we were getting there in AEW. Like in the fall, it started to feel like that.
It was getting bad. Well, he was listening to like the worst people. He was listening to the WWE folks that he brought over, Pat Buck and Sanjay Dutt and Jimmy Jacobs and Bogo Max, who is not WWE, but he's very much like that's what he likes. Mm-hmm. You know, like it started to get that way. And then since like the Continental Classic, it has really gotten back to what we really liked in 2019 when the Satan Hole started. Like we're getting back there again. And when I hear and see everybody lauding somebody from the office of WWE that they've never heard of, it makes me cringe a little bit. I'm like, okay, who are we fucking hiring next? Marsha from accounting, who's kind of like Greg from the mailroom? You guys want everybody from WWE? Like I just don't care.
Yeah, I'm with you. You can't tell me so-and-so is a good hire because you don't work there. You don't know what they do. Like, I'm with you 100% on this. Like, the more distinction we can feel, the more I think Tony has the reins of things, the better off we are. And you know how I can tell things are better is when O'Shea Jackson Jr. gets so angry, he blocks us.
He doesn't block me. He blocks you.
Oh, he just blocked me?
I thought he doesn't block me. You too.
Well, wear that badge
on. Yeah, no, I even put out a clip from making fun of him for his bad tweets last week.
And I got like, blocked. You got off okay? What the fuck?
I don't know, man. I guess I'm more polite. I don't know. I did like explain how much I respect his dad, and I still do. I know like a lot of people are not like Ice Cube Senior fans these days, but I can't stop liking the guy that I liked my whole life. So sorry. I don't care if his son's a butthead.
Son is a butthead. I mean, like he just has terrible wrestling takes. I mean, I love our buddy I love regular Scott, but he also has terrible wrestling takes. I mean, like, you can't get mad about that. But I mean, yeah. Like, I don't know, the fact that he blocked me, I'm like, wow, I've tried so hard to get blocked by other people and it hasn't happened. Didn't want any of my shit.
Yeah. King of the North says, her bringing an Emmy to WWE creative meeting is really funny though. Like they should,
she brought an Emmy to whoa. She brought to the creative meeting.
This was like a big story like 5 years ago where she got a ton of heat because she was in a creative meeting with Kevin Dunn and Kevin Dunn got like super pissed at her. And she was like in the doghouse for a little bit because of that, which I think is hilarious.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to spin this differently. You know how
you have to put it on TV?
Kevin Dunn's buck teeth ass was probably being completely, you know, insufferable in a meeting. And she's like, fuck this guy, and brought in her Emmy just to shut him up. Like, and I think that's funny. I think that's a baller move, to be honest with you.
I like
it. I think that's fucking awesome. Cause that guy, they've wanted an Emmy. Cause think of that company has wanted an Emmy for so long, so badly. And to have her bring hers in and be like, oh, I have one of these. I think that's fucking awesome, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
P.S. Hayes.
Yeah, but I guess Michael P.S. Hayes was the guy I had to fit. I've seen people say it was Kevin Dunn, but I think King of North might be right.
Either way. Bolts Vince sycophants.
Hadley says bring in Dave Prazak to book the women. You know what? Like, look, I know people like to laud that Ring of Honor women's division, but that company was on its dying days.
That's Shimmer.
Was it Shine?
Shimmer and Shine.
Shimmer. Well, Maria Kanellis was booking the women's division in Ring of Honor, and everybody was like, oh, this is the greatest division. But I was like, really? They had a tournament.
They had a tournament.
You know?
She booked a tournament. She put people in. I mean, like, look, do I not, should there be more women in creative positions in wrestling? Absolutely. I don't argue that. I think Maria, as the Ring of Honor booker in its dying days, is a little over the top.
Yeah. But give her an opportunity to be on the team. Count, you know, that's fine.
Sure.
That's,
listen to the voice.
Don't just say like hand to this person the book because you know, we don't know if they've been successful. We're in a company right now that, you know, could use success.
So. Counterpoint. You're not successful until you are.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, like you never get there until you're given a shot at getting there. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I'd like to hear people's ideas before saying, well, this person should have a voice. Like, well, do they have good ideas? Like, nobody really knows it. We all just assume people would be good at jobs. And sometimes people aren't very good at jobs.
Yeah. Well, and I hear the same thing about like coaches. Like people are saying like, for example, the 49ers need a new defensive coordinator, right? And a lot of people are saying, oh, Richard Sherman should be the defensive coordinator. I'm like, he's never coached the defense. Like he was a very good player. Mm-hmm. But can he call the plays? Like, I don't know. Like you got to work your way up or you got to really kill it in the interview. Like, tell me your ideas. Yeah. I advocate for John Muse all the time. It's because I know his ideas.
Yes.
Like he's actually like when we were actually going to do a little inside baseball for everybody back in the Brace for Impact days, me, JD and John, we were working up to this like fantasy booking show where John was going to present this booking idea for this, the Kurt Angle Cup. Like it was going to be
Bound for Glory, right? It was a Bound for Glory.
It was called the Kurt Angle Cup because we were already heading into Bound for Glory at this point. We're like the fourth quarter of the year, which Continental Classic ends up happening in like the fourth quarter. So I don't know if that was a coincidence or not, but so the three of us had this idea, the Kurt Angle Cup, and he booked the hell out of this thing. He had all these great, like unique style matches. It wasn't your average tournament. Like it wasn't single elimination either. It was a round robin tournament, but there were stipulations in some of the matches. There was a way to get your points back. There was all kinds of stuff. Like he killed this thing. And I'm like, that's like 4 months of television right now, but just based off of one tournament. Like I know his ideas, so I can advocate for him. I don't know Jennifer Pepperman's ideas. So, but we'll see. We'll see if she's pretty good or not. All right.
I'm gonna advocate for our friend right now because he's not listening. He'd be texting us if he was, and he's not.
He'd
here.
Be in the chat too.
In the chat. So like, I'm gonna advocate for our friend who's not here, who's gonna get embarrassed later when it's his. John Muse has never really been given a shot at a big level. He's always been the guy who's kind of just missed out barely. And I've had a million conversations with this dude about wrestling booking, and he's got great ideas, but because he's never been in the WWE system, he doesn't get looked at. Like it's always like, well, that guy's never really had it. And that's what I say. You're not successful until you're given a chance. And some people who could be very successful haven't been given a chance. And that's you praise John. So I decided to just pick up the ball a little bit and do the same.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got a couple more topics left. All right. So I want to get into this one real quick. I think this is pretty interesting news. Ric Flair biopic in the works from Dwayne Johnson and $7 Productions. $7 Productions is developing a project based on the life of the legendary American professional wrestler Ric Flair. The Wrap can exclusively reveal. Dwayne Johnson, Danny Garcia, Hiram Garcia will produce for $7 alongside Misher Films and Kevin Misher, with whom they most recently collaborated with on MGM's wrestling-themed Fighting With My Family. Okay, that kind of scares me a little bit. But, yeah, a Ric Flair movie, man. What are your thoughts on a Ric Flair biopic being in the works?
Yeah, I don't really have many on them, to be honest with you. Like, you think I'd have, like, some good takes on this? I don't, because movies get put in development all the time. Like, it's like 1% of movies in development get made. So, I mean, like, the odds that's actually happening are slim just by math, right? And did you see Fighting With My Family? Because I did not.
No, and I saw the previews for it, and honestly, like, I kind of liked Paige before that movie, but her promos for the movie, I just did not want to see her on television anymore, and I have never been interested in her since then, and I have not been interested in anything she's done in AEW. So, and maybe that's a me thing, I don't know, but like the leading up to that movie coming out, I was just like done with her.
One thing I'll say about that movie is it really kind of helped launch Florence Pugh, right? Between that and Midsommar. Great. Have you ever seen Midsommar?
No, I don't know who Florence Pugh is. I'm sorry.
Oh, she's big right now. She's okay. Very successful.
Which other movie? Which like movie that people would watch?
She was in this disaster of a film that I would say about this one first. She was in this disaster of a film that Olivia Wilde made called Don't Worry, Darling. That was trash, but she's like great in it. The movie fucking sucked. She was in the Black. You see Black Widow. Did you see the new Black Widow?
Yes.
Movie?
Yes.
She's okay. She's the sister. She's the sister.
Okay. Yeah. The new widow. Now you're talking my language, Black Widow. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, she's been in a lot of stuff. She's really good. She was in Oppenheimer just this past year.
Nonza says Oppenheimer there.
Yeah,
okay.
Very, very, very good. And Fighting With My Family was one of the first things that got her going. Midsommar, Mike, go watch that.
I'll have to check that out. Now, a lot of people, so here's my worry for the movie. You have like 50 years of a wrestling career, and you have so many different like chapters. There's no way to encapsulate it. And now everybody wants this movie to take all the good with the bad. And I just don't think that you can do that and have a successful movie. And I think you do need to get to the bad at some point, right? Like, and everybody wants, like, they want the whole movie to be playing right from hell. Like, that's what I think, like, Deadspin said something like that earlier today. It's like, nope, you got to focus on this. You cannot focus on the success, right? So I think you could do a little bit of both. But I think in this first movie, here's what I would like. And I am, you know, obviously he was like my favorite wrestler growing up. So I get that I'm a little bit biased. His life is very complicated from birth because he was a child that basically got sold as a black market baby to some doctors in Minnesota. Right. So his origin story is already complicated. And then you go up through college and then you got the start of his wrestling career where he's like idolizing Dusty Rhodes. And then you get to the plane crash and then he comes back from a broken back in the plane crash, said they're never going to wrestle again, to becoming the world heavyweight champion. That's one movie right there. Right. Yeah. Like you can do a whole movie just there. And then the next chapter, him like going crazy in the 80s and all the stuff and then getting to the WWF and winning that world title. That's like another movie. And then you got like all the drama with WCW, his return to WWF, his son dying, the plane ride from hell, TNA, retirement, and then almost dying himself. Like that's like a 3-hour movie right there. So you got like 3 or 4 movies. Right, just on one guy. I don't know that you can just do like one like bio. Like you have to pick certain time periods. You can't do every time period.
No, even the Von Erich movie, like they basically condensed the early 80s, right? Yeah. And then they kind of spit out the rest of it, like to get to Carrie's death. Like they just kind of gloss over a good 7 years, right? I don't know how you do that with a Flair movie. And I get that people want to talk about the plane ride from hell and all that stuff because you can't talk about Ric Flair without those things. Yeah. That is Rick, part of who Ric Flair is, right? I don't know how you do this. What do you have to, pick a specific moment to focus on and go from there and tell like an Oppenheimer, tell a story about a complicated man, right? Like, I don't know how else you do it. I don't envy the task of them trying to figure out what this movie is because I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah. I mean, they could do the whole, like, you know, like Forrest Gump, like, or not, well, like Saving Private Ryan, where he's like this old man, like reflecting on his life or something, you know what I mean? Like Forrest Gump or like one of those types of movies. I don't know. But there's just so much to the guy. He's like one of the more complicated, one of the more interesting characters that we've ever had
for sure
in pro wrestling. And so I don't envy it, but I'm interested to see what they make of it because, but the fighting with my family thing kind of scares me a little bit because the previews didn't look good to me.
No, I had no urge to see it. I'd advise them not hiring the guy who played Flair in the Iron Claw.
Yeah. Who would you get to play Flair? That's a King of the North question right here.
Who plays Flair? I think a good actor is most important. Who do you got? You got someone? I don't have anyone in mind.
So my thought, he's a bit older now. He's like older than us, but my first thought was Bradley Cooper. Right. Mm. But you can do some like CGI or AI to make him look younger. But I thought Bradley Cooper would be like, and I think there was like a rumor that he was going to do it. You know, Ryan Gosling could probably do it, you know, because he's like 50 or whatever, but he looks like he's 25 still. Son of a bitch. But, you know, maybe like Bradley Cooper, Ryan Gosling. That's who I would probably think of.
Joel Edgerton would be an interesting, the guy who played Elton John in the Elton John movie. He's pretty good. Or Austin Butler, who just played Elvis. He's young.
Yeah.
So if you wanted like a young Flair, like he could do an all right job. That means I'll put him on Austin steroids. Butler.
Yeah, Austin Butler's a good shout, actually.
Yeah. I'm thinking about it. I like those calls, actually. I think that's a tough one. I mean, like, Flair's such a character, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, then you have to like take the character but boil it into who the man is. And I think that'd be an interesting way to tell a story. It's like a man who's gotten so lost in his character that he can't find it anymore. I don't know. Like, there's an angle, but I don't know what time frame you focus on. I would do the 80s because I just think that's the most interesting thing personally.
What I would do is I would have like a mini series, like a 10 parter, or I would do like a series of movies, like a trilogy. And like the first movie is like Birth to Starrcade 83. Right. That's what I would do right there.
Yeah.
And then like the second movie is like The Horseman. And then, he ultimately like, runs into like Jim Herd and all the drama there with WCW, and then he goes to the WWF. Like, I would do that next.
You know what? The ESPN documentary, the 30 for 30 on Flair, was remarkably disappointing because like it was all stuff we'd already seen if you're a wrestling fan, and it was like it's so truncated. I would almost rather than a movie, I would love to see Ken Burns Ric Flair.
Yes. I've been wanting Ken Burns to do a thing just on pro wrestling the way he did, you know, baseball and the Civil War and Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's probably the guy to do it. He did really good ones on like singular people. He did Muhammad Ali, which I thought he like knocked that one out of the park. And then Jackie Robinson too. Absolutely destroyed that one. Yeah. That was awesome.
Greatest documentary filmmaker ever. He's hero.
Yeah. And I don't even think there's a second in command there. All right.
Errol Morris.
JD. Errol. Ooh, that's a good Thin Blue Line. Yeah, uh-huh, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then he did it. Yeah. Fog of War. That was really good. And he did one for Netflix about the MK Ultra. That might've actually ruined my life.
I've never seen that one.
Yes. Yeah. And then now there's like there's this book. I want to say the author is Robert O'Neill. I can't remember, but the book's called Chaos, and it's about like, you know, the MK Ultra program kind of extending into the 60s and possibly being behind the Manson murders and
oh my god, this is so Mike Gilbert. Continue.
I'm telling you, like the book, like I'm pretty excited for. Like, I have it on my iPad now. It's like my next thing that I'm going to be into.
What is MK Ultra? Educate us.
Oh, MK Ultra. It's Killer Kelly and Masha Slamovich, the tag team.
That's not what I meant. You fucking dickhead.
No. It was the CIA's like program back in the day where they're using LSD on like unwitting participants and kind of turning them into killers, essentially. And then it just went like horribly wrong. And so in this one, they actually followed a family where like the guy that they did the, and I don't want to like spoiler alert. We need to find out the name of this damn thing. But the family that they actually sued the CIA, they sued the federal government and won money because the dad was like working with the CIA. They tested the LSD on him and he ended up killing it, like jumping out of a hotel window. And like the documents got released like later in the 70s. and the family actually got to sue. Oh man, you know what? Now I have to like look up the I have to look up the name because now you need to watch
totally,
it.
I totally MK derailed Ultra, the show.
Errol Morris. Yes. Let's see. Wormwood. It's called Wormwood on Netflix. Oh, yeah, it's pretty good.
He's a phenomenal filmmaker. Thin Blue Line is one of the great get you angry about something documentaries.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. Speaking of get you angry. So we've been covering every week this whole the total nonstop action chaos that's going on in the world of TNA, and boy, did it pick up this week. So first what happened in the beginning of the week, Fightful Select reported that Steve Macklin's contract is about to expire. It expires at the end of May, which I went to Patreon, go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. And I did about a 30-minute rant about how TNA dropped the ball with my guy, Steve Macklin. Now everybody's like, Mike, you're very biased in this situation. I fucking know I'm biased. Like, yeah, everybody knows why I love Steve Macklin. But on top of that, I happen to think he's fantastic. And he's absolutely really a guy they could have built the whole company like around him and like Jot. Like those were their guys, right? Well, then earlier on that same day, Josh Alexander takes to Twitter and he tweets out like an hourglass emoji. And then the next thing you know, like the rest of the roster is tweeting it. And then like independent stars are tweeting it because they think it's a cool thing to do, a bunch of nerds. But like, and the very next day, Sports Illustrated reports that, and this is the headline, TNA Wrestling picks up Josh Alexander's option, right? They picked up his option, which is something that's pretty like normal in sports. Like right now, the 49ers are about to pick up Brandon Ayuk's fifth year option. Like, well, they're on their rookie deal that fifth year. If the team picks it up, they get a significant bump in pay, but they're not extended out. Like once they pick up that option, like that's it. Like the following year, they become a free agent or they can extend the deal during the season. So that's what happened here. So they picked up his option. And then immediately I'm sure Alexander like texted Sapp. He's like, hey brother, I didn't want them to do this. I was hoping for free agency. And they picked up my option. So that happens. And then on top of all that, Len Asper is on his way from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, to New Orleans this Saturday, where they're going to have their television tapings, and he's going to be addressing the entire locker room. And so that is going to be quite the interesting, because you know they might as well have like Sean Ross Sapp and Mike Johnson on speakerphone during that, because like an exact transcript is going to be written down and given to them, because this company is leaking like a sieve right now.
Yeah, it's not good. So it's funny because we've been, you know, I've been out of the chat. You have to probably put me back in soon. So many of our friends have been wanting TNA to be bigger than it is for so long. And to hear that they have no interest in being bigger, like it must be crushing to someone who really cares about that product to hear that the company that owns you just doesn't really care. Right. As a Ring of Honor fan, I sympathize. So I don't know, man. Like, it seems like there's a lot of people. It seems like that was a very harmonious locker room that is no longer a harmonious locker room. People pick up options. They picked up Deanna's last year. She was pretty open about that.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I think I made mistakes. I think that Josh and I think Josh Alexander and Macklin could have been a cornerstone feud in this company, and it never really was. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I mean, because Macklin's been there almost 3 years now, and I don't think over 3 years now. And I don't think they ever really like committed to a guy, right? Because he rebuilt himself there, and they've always were like interested in some other WWE cast off, right? It just puzzled me.
They were really interested in Scott D'Amore's guys, right? Like Josh Alexander is Scott D'Amore's guy.
Yeah, you're right.
Josh gets hurt. Macklin wins the title, and then 6 weeks later, he gives it to Alex Shelley, who is one of Scott D'Amore's guys. And then Alex Shelley proceeds to hold it for 9 months, despite the fact he only defended, I think, like five times. Third longest reigning champion in history for the company. And then he drops it to none other than Moose, who is another Scott D'Amore guy, right? Now I'm starting to see a lot of the trends with some of my frustration with a lot of the companies booking. And it's because Scott D'Amore had a locker room filled with cronies, I would say. And so like some guys are probably getting opportunities over others when maybe others like Steve Macklin would have been better suited for those opportunities. But that's how the wrestling business kind of goes though. Like you stick with the people that you trust. I get that. But here's the good news about TNA picking up Josh's option. Because it's going to come, it comes with a raise, right? Now, since Scott got fired and Anthony Chonchone was put in that position, we have been led to believe that they're significantly going to slash the budget. This move tells me the opposite, right? Because they're going to pick up the option on a guy and he's going to get a raise for the next year. And now they have 12 months to prove themselves to Josh Alexander about whether or not he wants to stay with this company. And so I think like Josh will be frustrated. I understand why TNA did it. They're kind of in a lose-lose situation here. Because if they didn't pick it up, they just lost their top guy, right? Like he's absolutely like, he's the guy they build the company around. So they lose him. And a lot of people like outsiders only come to watch TNA because like, oh, Josh Alexander has really good matches, right? And so that's the tough thing there. So they picked it up. He's probably a little bit pissed, but they got 12 months to make it up to him.
It's not what happened with Deonna. They picked up Deonna's option. No. They jobbed her for a year. So I mean,
here's what happened with Deonna though. Deonna didn't know that she had an option in her contract. Josh knew, like, and they did a press release together. Like TNA quietly picked up Deonna's contract, picked up her option. She was pretty salty about it, and then they proceeded to beat her like a drum for 12 months. I don't think they're doing that to Josh. I could be wrong. I just don't see that.
I mean, like. Because Deonna, it seems to me, now maybe I'm reading this wrong, Josh starts tweeting that he wants out. That's what an hourglass means. That means I'm waiting it out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then they go, nope, yeah. We're picking you up. That's a fuck you, man.
Well, here's the thing. That story got posted after the hourglass, but Josh did the interview with Sports Illustrated. They probably had done the interview a couple days prior to all that happening. So, like, I think they all knew what was going on.
But we know about that. That's what we know about.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
What has it been like there? I mean, I'm sure the hourglassing isn't the first time that someone has voiced displeasure, right? Like I'm not sold that they're going to try to prove themselves to Josh in a year. I think they could be like, oh, okay, well, fuck you.
My thing is that if they were really looking to slash the budget, they would have just let him walk, right? So that's my whole thing. So I think that is at least somewhat of a positive. And I think Joe Lanza was the first one that I saw make that point. It was not really anything that I actually had like thought about. I mostly thought of it as a negative because I'm like, you know, like Mike Tomlin said whenever Le'Veon Bell wanted to leave the Pittsburgh Steelers, his position was like, look, I didn't recruit hostages. Like if he wants to go, just let him go. But also Le'Veon Bell is just like a running back, so they easily replaced him. He's pretty good, but Josh Alexander is not like, you know, he's like kind of one of the cornerstones of the company. I don't think they just really still want to lose him.
No, I mean I get that. At the same time, like we talk about the time we'll just let guys go, but that doesn't happen very often in wrestling.
No,
like
no.
Andrade could have walked into the AEW locker room with a machete and just started swinging at people and told him kind of like, you know, I think I'm going to keep him around till his contract expires. You know, sure, he's killed six people, but I mean, like, it's good money. Like, they just don't do that. So, I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I want to see how the next 6 months play out.
I'm not saying it's at, like, I'm speaking absolutes. Like, I don't think it's like an absolute, like this whole thing can go sideways quick. Cause sure. We like, you know, much like Peppermint, like I never heard of this Chonchone guy until he got hired. Right now, here's what I do know about him. He's been an Anthem corporate stooge for like 12 years or whatever, like 16 years. Mm. Right. And so it's like, and then what you have is like, okay, what's his track record like? Well, he's been part of Fight Network. Well, has Fight Network actively grown since he's been there? Well, the answer is no. In fact, cable has only gotten smaller. Some of that's his fault, probably. Some of that not, right? And now he's going to be working over here, and they're going to be they merged everything under the Anthem Entertainment Group umbrella. So it's kind of a corporate restructuring. But here's what I do know: the booking was pretty stale for a long time. It was so bad, in fact, I have to host an Impact podcast by myself But like, that's how bad it got.
Sorry.
Like, so that's how bad it got. So hopefully they could bring in somebody with some new ideas. Now they brought in one of their other guys who's going to kind of run up the television production side, named Ariel Schneer. Actually John Pollock and Waiting Schneer. Yeah. John Pollock and Waiting actually spoke highly of him because they all work together at the Fight Network. And they said he is absolutely a wrestling guy. It's like, okay, well, I didn't know that about him. Right. So but I am not like hopeful. I think No Surrender, this happening tomorrow night, is going to be pretty interesting. I'll be talking about it on the podcast this weekend, for Brace for Impact, right here on the patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. I'll have that out this weekend. But Len Asper is going to be addressing the troops. So last week, the TNA roster banded together and actually wrote him a letter, almost begging him to bring Scott back. And Mike Johnson reported earlier today that is not going to happen, but Len Asper is going to address the troops. And here's how I think it's going to go. He's probably going to say, like, guys, sorry we lied about firing him. We did fire him. And that's because not only does he fuck one of the members of the roster, whenever we hired him, a month later, he went ahead and booked himself in the co-main event of Slammiversary in his hometown, and he won. And then he proceeded to push Big Con and to hire Simon Gotch. So we said, fuck this, we're out. Anthony Ciccione can do better.
Can I be honest with you, man? Like, I know people are upset about this Scott D'Amore thing. I've never seen a more overrated guy in my whole life. Like, this is the dude who's like, I couldn't stand what was happening in the company for a good year before I left it. Like, I know people are upset because they like everything, but I mean, like, is it that great of a loss? I mean, I don't. This Choncho guy, he's got very herd-esque, yes. Very herdy.
JD, don't say Choncho. That's my joke. It's Ciccione. It's a derogatory term in Spanish that I got from American Me, and I'm waiting for someone to actually look that up so they can laugh about it. Oh, but I don't want you to like get caught saying, because you're like a teacher. Oh, I don't want you to get in trouble. Yeah.
I didn't know. I thought that was the guy's name. My bad. I forgot what it was.
I just assumed you've seen American Me. You're not watching like Hispanic 80s movies about Mexican gangs in prison.
I saw Blood In, Blood Out.
Okay.
So I just I missed that one. I withdraw that statement. The hire seems very herdy, very herd-esque.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So,
but again, I don't know, man. I don't think we'll be asked some guy. So I forget. I think it might have been Nanzo in the chat. Goes, has TNA ever talked to John Muse? Yeah, I'll say it. I know they had some conversations. Scott didn't. I shouldn't talk. Well, I don't like Scott Moore all that much either. We'll just leave it at that.
Well, here's the thing. Here's why everybody's upset, is because Hard to Kill was very successful for TNA. There's no two ways about it. Over 30,000 buys on pay-per-view show, right? Mm-hmm. That's really fucking good, right? And all of the wrestlers are upset. And one by one, they took to social media. And I think that got everybody riled up. But look, if they're not making the money that Anthem wanted them to make, right? I get it. I get why you would make this move. But it's like, okay, ultimately it's in the execution. Like, who are you replacing them with? Is the replacement better? We don't know the answer to that question yet, because it's very much like you said, Jim Herd, or it's like, at least when Eric Bischoff got hired in WCW, like, he had been in wrestling for a while and he kind of like knew this television side of the business, and he was very good at like marketing. Like, that was his like area of expertise. But Jim Herd just managed like a St. Louis television station that the end of like St. Louis wrestling was on. Or like that's his claim to fame. And so that's kind of like what Ciccione, he managed Fight Network. Like, that's what he's, and now he's the president of TNA Wrestling. So we're going to see how this thing works out. Yeah. I don't know how it's going to play out, but I will be covering. And I got to be honest with you, JD, Brace for Impact has gotten a lot more fun now that there's drama, because believe it or not, like, over more often than not, like, over the course of our podcast together on Brace for Impact, like, they were relatively drama free. Like, they would like wrestlers would like their contracts would expire and they would go elsewhere. That was like the worst thing that happened in that company during the entire run that we had together. But now, like, D'Amore's getting fired. Josh Alexander's talking shit. Steve Macklin's talking shit. Like, Jordan Grace is all mad. Moose is like a sensible guy. Like, Moose is like, you know, he was upset at first, but he was like, he was on a podcast yesterday and he was talking about it. The guy said, well, look, you get accustomed to these things. He goes, my first year in the NFL, the guy that drafted me ended up getting fired going into my second year. And that continued to happen for 8 years in my NFL career, where I was like going from team to team and like people get fired. He goes, these things just happen. He goes,
right.
We're not working together, but the guy's still my friend and my mentor. Hold on. King of the North wants to get into a fight. Hold on. Let's see. He said, Mike, they're booking top dollar. Yes, I understand. And I think earlier he asked, what do I think about the dream team of
Greg Valentine and Bruce Beefcake?
Oh, even better, sir. Diener and AJ Francis teaming up this weekend on Saturday. Main event in any arena in the look. Okay.
County?
Yeah, in the county fair. I'll be honest. I'm not a big fan of Top Dollar. In fact, I've named him Dollar General, and that's his name on the show. So when you guys talk about Dollar General, please use that name. I'm trying to get it over. I'm not a big fan, but here's what I will say. They treat him like an absolute dork, and that entertains me. The fact that they just kind of like they shit on him and like make fun of him and call him like a shitty rapper who can't dive over ropes, and Joe Hendry makes songs about him. He's already made two. Like I think that's kind of funny, right? So if they're just continuing to treat him like a geek, I'm you know, and it's on like that match is going to be on Explosion, okay? Like that's what that's going to be. Like they're taping the match this Saturday, but it's going to be on like their pre-show. So I really don't care.
Top Dollar said, "I cannot believe JD stepped on your bit like that." Was that like
the chone?
Oh man!
Well, he didn't step on it. I don't want him getting in trouble for saying something he shouldn't be saying.
I didn't know it was a bit. I had no idea I was stepping on a bit. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't known that. I don't know, man. TNA is a disaster right now. It doesn't make me want to go back to Bray Stereo.
Honestly, it's pretty fun. I've had a lot of podcasts, and the videos are doing great on YouTube. Everybody, go to the Mike and JD Show YouTube channel. Make sure you hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button and to continue to comment on our videos. I would greatly appreciate it. Nonzo, ask me this question whenever I do Brace for Impact. We'll get into that because JD's falling asleep again, so we got to get out of here.
I'm good. I'm up.
I'm just kidding. I'm busting your balls. You've been gone for 2 weeks. I'm busting your chops.
I need some ball busting.
But yeah, go to the Mike and JD Show YouTube channel. Make sure you're a subscriber, like and comment on the videos, and then go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. Tons of content. I'm going to have two Brace for Impacts out this weekend, a No Surrender review, and then JD is making his return. Wrestling season is over, so JD will be back with the JD Oliva Project. You got any words on that, JD?
I'm going to do I just tweeted. You gave me an idea about like this book stuff. I've been doing these like book recommendations on my Facebook page, and I only get to say so much about it. So I went out today, and I had a lot of thoughts about this weird-ass book that I just finished reading. It's wild. Like, it's so out of my comfort zone. And I gotta get them down. I gotta get them out there because I could write an essay on this. So I decided I'm gonna do a JD Oliva project about this kind of stuff. I promised my friend I'd talk to them about it first, and then I'm gonna lay that down this weekend. So yeah, should be fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. And then don't forget about Sting Week next week, starting on Monday on the Mike and JD Show YouTube channel.
Sting. Sting. Do you remember Tulsa?
I thought about uploading the Black Scorpion one too, but we already did that on the Voices of Wrestling. We didn't do it on our page though. Maybe I'll
That's
just do
true.
That too.
That's yeah. true.
Maybe I'll do all like read. I'll upload the Black Scorpion.
How much trouble will that one get us into? We just have YouTube.
As long as I only do the audio, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but if I do the video, we're screwed. So.
Then YouTube's stupid. It's so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. But all right, guys, I think that's going to do it for us this week. It was a really good show today. I greatly appreciate all you guys being here live in the chat. It really helps out the show. And thank you very much for that. And until next week, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's a click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen, no rain from the track when we...
Hello everyone, my name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.